We're also happy to welcome Danny Dorling, Professor of Geography at the University of Oxford, an author of numerous books, including Inequality and the 1%, and recently published Slow Down. Each of the speakers is going to speak for 10 to 12 minutes. Danny, take it away. Sorry.
Thank you so much. It kind of makes sense to start with me because I want to talk a little about the past, quite a lot about the present, and a little bit less about what we want because we're kind of in it, in the middle. The thing about the past, we've had pandemics before and we should look at them to see what happened last time. You can go way back to 1665 and you can find plagues and so on where everything changed because the death rate was so high, the value of labour went up, but that was a long time ago. The pandemics of the last century and a couple of years, which we should remember, are the 1918-1919 one, the really, really large pandemic, which probably 17.5 million people died worldwide. Not the 50 million that said, but when you actually work out excess deaths, for 1918-1919, it's 17.5 million. Still enormous. World GDP dropped by 14%. There was a war in Europe, of course, but only in Europe. It dropped by 14% in 1 year, but the next year it rose by 16%. It was almost as if that pandemic had never happened. Other pandemics, and this is the point I'm trying to make to you, is just how easily they were ignored because you won't know of them. And these were all bigger than the one we're currently going through. The 1951 flu pandemic. Not a jot to economic activity. The 1957 flu pandemic, even bigger. And during the 1957 flu pandemic, right in the middle of it, Harold Macmillan stood up and said, "You have never had it so good," to the people of Britain. So if you want to get a sense of something had changed, there's obviously no way, although Boris at the beginning of this was saying, "Brave new world, Brexit, here we come." But we have to remember, 1957, pandemic, no effect on social change. And then 1968-69, 100,000 people die in the USA, a million people die worldwide. Second waves in 1970 and 1972. Second waves are not about 3 weeks' time, right? Second waves are about the autumn, the next year. But 1968-69, again, if any of you are lucky enough to have been old enough, you probably won't remember it. You may remember, if you're very old, somebody you knew who died, but it's not talked about. So, pandemics feel, or can feel, all-encompassing at the time, but they can have little effect. However, this one is different. This one is different because of our reaction to it, because of shutting everything down, because of the lockdown. It showed that something had changed. We were already slowing down economically, but we valued life more. We value life more now than we used to, that's clear. By the way, last thing I'll say about the previous pandemics, the world population was much smaller then, and there were far fewer old people then. So they really were devastating. I'm going to show you some graphs of this pandemic, and then I'm going to shut up within my allotted time. So let me try sharing screen. And hopefully that's worked. I've just been writing something about what do we know now about COVID-19 in the UK. So I only wrote it yesterday, so I thought it'd be useful to share. The first thing worth saying is all about chance and luck. For each of us individually, it's chance and luck that matters most for getting or not getting this. But also for whole countries, chance and luck are very important. We now know it was circulating in December in China. It would not have been impossible for a businessman, almost certainly a man, to have flown in from China, from Wuhan, into Edinburgh on New Year's Eve, gone to a pub, and started the European epidemic in Scotland. And it's very important when you're comparing countries and talking about what happened to realise how important chance was, not just in international patterns, but with inside the continent of Europe. As it was Italy. As it was, the UK had some warning. As it was, we handled it extremely badly. But at least we had the chance to handle it very badly. It might have hit without any warning whatsoever. You may well know this, but in case you don't, these are the death rates as of Tuesday when ONS released them from COVID. Along the bottom, this is 1%, 2% and 3% if you can see my mouse. 3% of all people aged over 90, all men, have now died. 3%. 2% of all women aged over 90 in the UK have now died. So this is England and Wales, but the UK is similar for those figures. For late 80s, 1% of all men in their late 80s have now died, roughly 0.5% of women. But then you'll see how quickly it curves down, right? And this is not like all those previous pandemics, which were flu pandemics, in how much this hits the elderly. And that'll matter for what happens from this. You have to draw it on a log scale to see it. There it is on a log scale. I know people don't like log scales, but really, it is absolutely related to age. Age matters above all else. Then sex. Men, in effect, have the chances of a woman 5 years older than them. Then occupation, whether you're forced to be with people. Then geography, and whether you're living in an area where the disease came early and so on. But age matters more than anything else. Right at the very bottom, this is one child, one 10 to 14 year old only died. One 1 to 14 year old creates this chance, two babies. You are 10,000 times more likely to die of this if you're 80 or over than if you're a child. Huge differences. How's it moved across the country? It's fast up and down. This is deaths, registered deaths. The peak in London was on the week which ended on the 10th of April. The peak was April the 7th, round about when Boris Johnson went into intensive care. To my mind, the most effective public health measure was actually Boris going into intensive care. That really scared people more than the lockdown. And social distancing had a huge effect before the lockdown. Anyway, there's London, up and down very rapidly, and you can see each region similarly. Southwest, luckily most far away from it, lower peak, still down. Those are all the regional curves. The reason for showing you the regional curves is that they add up to a national curve that looks like this. It goes down more slowly than it goes up because it's made up of lots of little curves, which are each more symmetrical. So it is definitely going down. It's going down across the whole of Europe. You have to be vigilant, but it is going down. And it's going down at such a speed that within a couple of months, we will be talking about this as an extremely rare disease in Europe, with luck. And often on the left, people don't look at that. We can go on and on. This is the second derivative. Why am I showing you that? Because the worst day was around about the 31st of March, where if you've been privy to the data and you were in London, you might have well have concluded this is completely out of control. It's rising exponentially. It's terrible. We've got no idea what's going to happen. And you might have decided to drive 264 miles to Durham had you seen that data then. I just thought I'd include that. Nobody's yet mentioned why would you drive so far away from London. The answer is because you're scared that London was going to fall apart. Excess deaths. You'll see loads and loads and loads on this. This is how pandemics are always estimated in the long term. This is our pandemic for England and Wales. At some point, this little orange line will drop below the little blue line. When it drops below, that'll be fewer people dying than normal because of people who've died who were near to death as it was. And things will get very difficult to explain. And when we get to the end of the year, we'll finally be able to say, actually, how many people has this killed? We can't say that now. This graph is showing you the 13 areas where it hit first. They're really disparate. I'll just show you the list of names. Broxburn, Ceredigion in Wales, Chiltern, Erewash, Fareham, Lambeth, only one in London, Lambeth, Newport in Wales, Rochford, South Bucks, South Holland, South Staffordshire, Tunbridge Wells and Wolverhampton. These are the areas which had a peak in week 13. It was all over the country by February. The green lines are hospital deaths, the red are care homes. Absolute disaster, releasing people to care homes from hospitals in which it was rife. Even in February. and I can show you more and more of these. This is Liverpool, but I just want to show you them to get the idea of how fast down it is. The green are hospitals, the red are care homes, the yellow is at home. Hardly anybody dies at home from this. I want to give you an idea how quickly things are changing. Now, all the sensible scientific advice is to tell people, be careful, ask near one, and so on, right? But this is the actual numbers. And you need to know this politically, because you need to know how fast, politically, the situation is likely to change in the next few weeks, as suddenly we go from a clear and present danger to something where you're much more likely to be hit crossing the road and getting COVID, and at some point, more likely to die being hit by lightning if you're under a certain age and from COVID. And that's not far away. That's Liverpool. This is Brent, the worst hit area along with Newham in the whole of the UK, worst hit possibly in Europe, possibly 1% of the population of Brent. I've got 2 minutes left, so you won't get more of this morbidness. Here's Durham. If you wanted to know what Durham, County Durham, looked like, this is when Dominic turned up. It wasn't just him, but it wasn't helpful having people coming into County Durham. Here's Cornwall, similar area to Durham. People from London, rich people, often have two homes or a spare home, and you can see the similar pattern in Cornwall to County Durham, that sudden rise when things are really bad in London. And my last graph, this is Westminster, residents of Westminster. The line is 25 days after the lockdown. It was already falling before the lockdown could have had an effect because of social distancing, because people were scared. This was drawn to be reminiscent of a famous graph of Jon Snow and the pump in Broad Street in Soho, where he took the handle off the pump, if you know your cholera epidemics, long after the actual disease had fallen. So the lockdown wasn't the main thing that saved us. It was the social distancing before, and then possibly the absolute fear when the Prime Minister went into intensive care. I'll stop sharing now and just wrap up. So, whatever you want, and every group I belong to thinks this is their chance. The people arguing for 20 miles an hour think this is their chance. The people against airports think this is their chance. Whatever you want, you're not going to have very much time to make your case, because the disease is going down, the surveillance is enormous, the fear is incredible, the chances of a second and third wave should be pretty low. But huge changes are afoot. Most importantly, somebody's going to have to pay for this. There will be, I'll put it very simply on our end here, there will be fewer refrigerators coming in to the United Kingdom. There are fewer made in China, there will be fewer coming in. The question is, who's going to get those fridges? How is the economics going to be sorted out? And you either tax the rich, either through wealth or income, to allow you to pay for this, and in a sense stop them buying two or three refrigerators so that other people can have one, or you don't, in which case you choose austerity and will have more families unable to buy a refrigerator. That is the choice we now face, because there will be fewer refrigerators coming in. If you do tax the rich more, you do things like destroy the entire private education system, because it absolutely depends, those 7% children going to private schools, depends on the disposable income of rich families. So you get an idea of kind of what's at stake. The reason they don't want their wealth and income taxed is because their way of life will begin to end if you do that. You know, you can guess what I want, and I'm going to stop there. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much, Danny, that was really fascinating.